Chapter 3. Canada. Musk's great escape to Canada was not well thought out. He knew of a great uncle in Montreal, hopped on a flight, and hoped for the best. Upon landing in June 1988, Musk found a payphone and tried to use directory assistance to find his uncle. When that didn't work, he called his mother, Colette. She had bad news. May had sent a letter to the uncle before Musk left and received a reply while her son was in transit. The uncle had gone to Minnesota, meaning Musk had nowhere to stay. Bags in hand, Musk headed for a youth hostel. After spending a few days in Montreal exploring the city, Musk tried to come up with a long-term plan. May had family scattered all across Canada, and Musk began reaching out to them. He bought a countrywide bus ticket that let him hop on and off as he pleased for $100 and opted to head to Saskatchewan, the former home of his grandfather. After a 1,900-mile bus ride, he ended up in Swift Current, a town of 15,000 people. Musk called a second cousin out of the blue from the bus station and hitched a ride to his house. Musk spent the next year working a series of odd jobs around Canada. He tended vegetables and shoveled out grain bins at a cousin's farm located in the tiny town of Waldeck. Musk celebrated his 18th birthday there, sharing a cake with the family he'd just met and a few strangers from the neighborhood. After that, he learned to cut logs with a chainsaw in Vancouver, British Columbia. The hardest job Musk took came after a visit to the unemployment office. He inquired about the job with the best wage, which turned out to be a gig cleaning the boiler room of a lumber mill for $18 an hour. You have to put on this hazmat suit and then shimmy through this little tunnel that you can barely fit in, Musk said. Then you have a shovel, and you take the sand and goop and other residue, which is still steaming hot, and you have to shovel it through the same hole you came through. There is no escape. Someone else on the other side has to shovel it into a wheelbarrow. If you stay in there for more than 30 minutes, you get too hot and die. 30 people started out at the beginning of the week. By the third day, 5 people were left. At the end of the week, it was just Musk and 2 other men doing the work. As Musk made his way around Canada, his brother, sister, and mother were figuring out how to get there as well. When May went to Canada to check out places to live, a 14-year-old Tosca seized the moment and put the family house in South Africa up for sale. She had sold my car as well and was in the midst of putting our furniture up for sale, too, May said. When I got back, I asked her why. She said, "There is no need to delay. We are getting out of here." When Kimball and Elon eventually reunited in Canada, their headstrong, playful natures bloomed. Elon ended up enrolling at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, in 1989. He picked Queen's over the University of Waterloo because he felt there were more good-looking women at Queen's. Outside of his studies, Elon would read the newspaper alongside Kimball, and the two of them would identify interesting people they would like to meet. They then took turns cold-calling these people to ask if they were available to have lunch. Among the harassed was the head of marketing for the Toronto Blue Jays baseball team, a business writer for the Globe and Mail, and a top executive at the Bank of Nova Scotia, Peter Nicholson. Nicholson remembered the boys' call well. "I was not in the habit of getting out of the blue requests," he said. "I was perfectly prepared to have lunch with a couple of kids that had that kind of gumption." It took 6 months to get on Nicholson's calendar, but sure enough, the Musk brothers made a 3-hour train ride and showed up on time. Nicholson's first exposure to the Musk brothers left him with an impression many would share. Both presented themselves well and were polite. Elon, though, clearly came off as the geekier, more awkward counterpoint to the charismatic, personable Kimball. "I became more impressed and fascinated as I talked to them," Nicholson said. "They were so determined." Nicholson ended up offering Elon a summer internship at the bank and became his trusted advisor. Not long after their initial meeting, Elon invited Peter Nicholson's daughter, Christy, to his birthday party. Christy showed up at May's Toronto apartment with a jar of homemade lemon curd in hand and was greeted by Elon and about 15 other people. Elon had never met Christy before, but he went right up to her and led her to a couch. Then I believe the second sentence out of his mouth was, "I think a lot about electric cars," Christy said. And then he turned to me and said, "Do you think about electric cars?" The conversation left Christy, who was now a science writer, with the distinct impression that Musk was handsome, affable, and a tremendous nerd. "For whatever reason, I was so struck by that moment on the sofa," she said. "You could tell that this person was very different. He captivated me in that way." With her angular features and blonde hair, Christy fit Musk's type, and the two stayed in touch during Musk's time in Canada. They never really dated, but Christy found Musk interesting enough to have lengthy conversations with him on the phone. One night he told me, "If there was a way that I could not eat so I could work more, I would not eat. I wish there was a way to get nutrients without sitting down for a meal." The enormity of his work ethic at that age and his intensity jumped out. It seemed like one of the more unusual things I had ever heard. A deeper relationship during this stint in Canada arose between Musk and Justine Wilson, a fellow student at Queen's. Leggy with long brown hair, Wilson radiated romance and sexual energy. Justine had already fallen in love with an older man and then ditched him to go to college. Her next conquest was meant to wear a leather jacket and be a damaged James Dean sort. As fortune would have it, however, the clean-cut, posh-sounding Musk spotted Wilson on campus and went right to work trying to date her. "She looked pretty great," Musk said. "She was also smart, and this intellectual was sort of an edge. She had a black belt in Taekwondo and was semi-bohemian and, you know, like the hot chick on campus." He made his first move just outside of her dorm, where he pretended to have bumped into her by accident, and then reminded her that they had met previously at a party. Justine, only 1 week into school, agreed to Musk's proposal of an ice cream date. When he arrived to pick up Wilson, Musk found a note on the dorm room door notifying him that he'd been stood up. It said that she'd had to go study for an exam and couldn't make it, and that she was sorry, Musk said. Musk then hunted down Justine's best friend and did some research, asking where Justine usually studied and what her favorite flavor of ice cream was. Later, as Justine hid in the student center studying Spanish, Musk appeared behind her with a couple of melting chocolate chip ice cream cones in hand. Wilson had dreamed of having a torrid romance with a writer. "I wanted to be Sylvia and Ted," she said. What she fell for instead was a relentless, ambitious geek. The pair attended the same abnormal psychology class and compared their grades following an exam. Justine notched a 97, Musk a 98. He went back to the professor and talked his way into the 2 points he lost and got 100, Justine said. "It felt like we were always competing." Musk had a romantic side as well. One time he sent Wilson a dozen roses, each with its own note, and he also gifted Wilson a copy of The Prophet, filled with handwritten romantic musings. "He can sweep you off your feet," Justine said. During their university years, the two youngsters were off and on, with Musk having to work hard to keep the relationship going. "She was hip and dated the coolest guys and wasn't interested in Elon at all," May said. "So that was hot on him." Musk pursued a couple of other girls, but kept returning to Justine. Anytime she acted cool toward him, Musk responded with his usual show of force. "He would call very insistently," she said. "You always knew it was Elon because the phone would never stop ringing. The man does not take no for an answer. You can't blow him off. I do think of him as the Terminator. He locks his gaze onto something and says, 'It shall be mine.' Bit by bit, he won me over." College suited Musk. He worked on being less of a know-it-all, while also finding a group of people who respected his intellectual abilities. The university students were less inclined to laugh off or deride his opinionated takes on energy, space, and whatever else was captivating him at the moment. Musk had found people who responded to his ambition rather than mocking it, and he fed on this environment. Navaid Farouk, a Canadian who grew up in Geneva, ended up in Musk's freshman year dormitory in the fall of 1990. Both men were placed in the international section, where a Canadian student would get paired with a student from overseas. Musk sort of broke the system, since he technically counted as a Canadian, but knew almost nothing about his surroundings. "I had a roommate from Hong Kong, and he was a really nice guy," Musk said. "He religiously attended every lecture, which was helpful, since I went to the least number of classes possible." For a time, Musk sold computer parts and full PCs in the dorm to make some extra cash. "I could build something to suit their needs, like a tricked-out gaming machine, or a simple word processor that costs less than what they could get in a store," Musk said. "Or if their computer didn't boot properly or had a virus, I'd fix it. I could pretty much solve any problem." Farouk and Musk bonded over their backgrounds living abroad and a shared interest in strategy board games. "I don't think he makes friends easily, but he is very loyal to those he has," Farouk said. When the video game Civilization was released, the college chums spent hours building their empire, much to the dismay of Farouk's girlfriend, who was forgotten in another room. "Elon could lose himself for hours on end," Farouk said. The students also relished their loner lifestyles. "We are the kinds of people that can be by ourselves at a party and not feel awkward," Farouk said. "We can think to ourselves and not feel socially weird about it." Musk was more ambitious in college than he'd been in high school. He studied business, competed in public speaking contests, and began to display the brand of intensity and competitiveness that marks his behavior today. After one economics exam, Musk, Farouk, and some other students in class came back to the dorms and began comparing notes to try to ascertain how well they did on the test. It soon became clear that Musk had a firmer grasp on the material than anyone else. This was a group of fairly high achievers, and Elon stood way outside of the bell curve, Farouk said. Musk's intensity has continued to be a constant in their long relationship. "When Elon gets into something, he develops just this different level of interest in it than other people. That is what differentiates Elon from the rest of humanity." In 1992, having spent 2 years at Queens, Musk transferred to the University of Pennsylvania on a scholarship. Musk saw the Ivy League school as possibly opening some additional doors and went off in pursuit of dual degrees, first an economics degree from the Wharton School and then a bachelor's degree in physics. Justine stayed at Queens, pursuing her dream of becoming a writer, and maintained a long-distance relationship with Musk. Now and again she would visit him, and the two would sometimes head off to New York for a romantic weekend. Musk blossomed even more at Penn and really started to feel comfortable while hanging out with his fellow physics students. "At Penn, he met people that thought like him," May said. "There were some nerds there. He so enjoyed them. I remember going for lunch with them, and they were talking physics things. They were saying, 'A plus B equals pi squared,' or whatever. They would laugh out loud. It was cool to see him so happy." Once again, however, Musk did not make many friends among the broader school body. It's difficult to find former students who remember him being there at all. But he did make one very close friend named Adeo Resi, who would go on to be a Silicon Valley entrepreneur in his own right, and is, to this day, as tight with Elon as anyone. Resi is a lanky guy well over 6 feet tall and possesses an eccentric air. He was the artistic, colorful foil to the studious, more buttoned-up Musk. Both of the young men were transfer students and ended up being placed in the funky freshman dorm. The lackluster social scene did not live up to Ressi's expectations, and he talked Musk into renting a large house off campus. They got the 10-bedroom house relatively cheap, since it was a frat house that had gone unrented. During the week, Musk and Ressi would study, but as the weekend approached, Ressi in particular would transform the house into a nightclub. He covered the windows with trash bags to make it pitch black inside, and decorated the walls with bright paints and whatever objects he could find. "It was a full-out, unlicensed speakeasy," Ressi said. "We would have as many as 500 people. We would charge $5, and it would be pretty much all you could drink, beer and jello shots and other things." Come Friday night, the ground around the house would shake from the intensity of the bass being pumped out by Ressi's speakers. May visited one of the parties and discovered that Ressi had hammered objects into the walls and lacquered them with glow-in-the-dark paint. She ended up working the door as the coat check slash money taker and grabbed a pair of scissors for protection as the cash piled up in a shoebox. A second house had 14 rooms. Musk, Ressi, and one other person lived there. They fashioned tables by laying plywood on top of used kegs and came up with other makeshift furniture ideas. Musk returned home one day to find that Ressi had nailed his desk to the wall and then painted it in day-glow colors. Musk retaliated by pulling his desk down, painting it black, and studying. "I'm like, dude, that's installation art in our party house," said Ressi. "Remind Musk of this incident, and he'll respond matter-of-factly, it was a desk." Musk will have the occasional vodka and Diet Coke, but he's not a big drinker and does not really care for the taste of alcohol. "Somebody had to stay sober during these parties," Musk said. "I was paying my own way through college and could make an entire month's rent in one night. Adeo was in charge of doing cool shit around the house, and I would run the party." As Ressi put it, "Elon was the most straight-laced dude you have ever met. He never drank. He never did anything. Zero. Literally nothing." The only time Ressi had to step in and moderate Musk's behavior came during video game binges that could go on for days. Musk's longtime interest in solar power and in finding other new ways to harness energy expanded at Penn. In December 1994, he had to come up with a business plan for one of his classes and ended up writing a paper titled "The Importance of Being Solar." The document started with a bit of Musk's wry sense of humor. At the top of the page, he wrote, "The sun will come out tomorrow. Little Orphan Annie on the subject of renewable energy." The paper went on to predict a rise in solar power technology based on materials improvements and the construction of large-scale solar plants. Musk delved deeply into how solar cells work and the various compounds that can make them more efficient. He concluded the paper with a drawing of the power station of the future. It depicted a pair of giant solar arrays in space, each 4 kilometers in width, sending their juice down to Earth via microwave beams to a receiving antenna with a 7-kilometer diameter. Musk received a 98 on what his professor deemed a very interesting and well-written paper. A second paper talked about taking research documents and books and electronically scanning them, performing optical character recognition, and putting all of the information in a single database, much like a mix between today's Google Books and Google Scholar. And a third paper dwelled on another of Musk's favorite topics, ultracapacitors. In the 44-page document, Musk is plainly jubilant over the idea of a new form of energy storage that would suit his future pursuits with cars, planes, and rockets. Pointing to the latest research coming out of a lab in Silicon Valley, he wrote, "The end result represents the first new means of storing significant amounts of electrical energy since the development of the battery and fuel cell. Furthermore, because the ultracapacitor retains the basic properties of a capacitor, it can deliver its energy over 100 times faster than a battery of equivalent weight and be recharged just as quickly." Musk received a 97 for this effort and praise for a very thorough analysis with excellent financials. The remarks from the professor were spot on. Musk's clear, concise writing is the work of a logician, moving from one point to the next with precision. What truly stood out, though, was Musk's ability to master difficult physics concepts in the midst of actual business plans. Even then, he showed an unusual knack for being able to perceive a path from a scientific advance to a for-profit enterprise. As Musk began to think more seriously about what he would do after college, he briefly considered getting into the video game business. He'd been obsessed with video games since his childhood and had held a gaming internship. But he came to see them as not quite grand enough a pursuit. "I really like computer games. But then if I made really great computer games, how much effect would that have on the world?" he said. "It wouldn't have a big effect. Even though I have an intrinsic love of video games, I couldn't bring myself to do that as a career." In interviews, Musk often makes sure that people know he had some truly big ideas on his mind during this period of his life. As he tells it, he would daydream at Queens and Penn and usually end up with the same conclusion. He viewed the Internet, renewable energy, and space as the three areas that would undergo significant change in the years to come, and as the markets where he could make a big impact. He vowed to pursue projects in all three. "I told all my ex-girlfriends and my ex-wife about these ideas," he said. "It probably sounded like super crazy talk." Musk's insistence on explaining the early origins of his passion for electric cars, solar energy, and rockets can come off as insecure. It feels as if Musk is trying to shape his life story in a forced way. But for Musk, the distinction between stumbling into something and having intent is important. Musk has long wanted the world to know that he's different from the run-of-the-mill entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. He wasn't just sniffing out trends, and he wasn't consumed by the idea of getting rich. He's been in pursuit of a master plan all along. "I really was thinking about this stuff in college," he said. "It's not some invented story after the fact. I don't want to seem like a Johnny-come-lately or that I'm chasing a fad or just being opportunistic. I'm not an investor. I like to make technologies real that I think are important for the future and useful in some sort of way.